Hi, I'm Femi Oke. You're watching the stream. How do you say sorry for slavery? This is how the Dutch government apologised for its part in the transatlantic slave trade.
Het klopt dat niemand die nu.
It is true that nobody alive today bears any personal guilt for slavery. But it is also true that the Dutch state, in all its manifestations through history, bears responsibility for the immense suffering that has been done to those who were enslaved and their descendants.
En hun nazaten is aangedaan. Vandaag bied ik namens de Nederlandse.
Today, on behalf of the Dutch government, I apologise for the past actions of the Dutch state to enslaved people in the past, everywhere in the world, who suffered as a consequence of those actions, as well as to their daughters and sons, and to all their descendants, up to the present day.
Tot in het hier en nu.
The Netherlands Prime Minister Mark Rutte's official apology received some mixed reactions. Let's see what you had to say on Twitter to us. An apology without reparation is just an excuse. And what will sorry do? Rewrite the past? Apology alone isn't enough, but it is a good start. What do you think? On YouTube, our comment section is live. You're very welcome to be part of this program. Put your thoughts right here. So how do you address the challenges and issues when it comes to making a formal apology for slavery? Helping us have that conversation, Linda, Quincy and Maz. So good to have all three of you with us. Linda, please say hello to our audience around the world. Tell them who you are, what you do.
Hello, everybody. My name is Linda Nooitmeer and I'm the chair of the Dutch of NINSEE board. And NINSEE is the Dutch Institute on Slavery and its Legacy.
Good to have you. Quincy, I should say welcome back to the stream. It's been a few years, but it's always good to have you. Please say hello to our audience around the world.
Hi, I'm Quincy Gario. I'm an artist and a poet. And 8 years ago, I was on the stream talking about the other Dutch practice called Black Piet. And so I'm here again to be a bit of a troublemaker.
Good to have you. Hello, Amaz. Nice to have you on the stream. Please say hello to our audience around the world. Tell them who you are, what you do.
Hi, I'm Almaz Tefera, and I'm the researcher on racism in Europe for Human Rights Watch, which is a global human rights organization.
All right. Almaz, an apology for slavery. If you're a country that was a former colonial country who enslaved people, does that apology have to come at some point? You have to say sorry.
Yes. So the first reaction is that this is a big deal for the Prime Minister of the Netherlands to acknowledge that the Dutch state enabled, encouraged and profited from slavery for centuries. So this recognition that the crimes amounted to crimes against humanity with ongoing impact on descendants of enslaved people lays the path for accountability of the Netherlands and further actions. So the formal apology is therefore an important first step, but certainly not the last step toward a reckoning with its slavery past and also the impacts it has had on descendants of enslaved people today and allowing for a healing also for descendants of those enslaved, many of whom also live in the Netherlands. So you could say, obviously, you know, that this apology is coming 150 years too late, but it is it's nevertheless a signal of change that needs to now be translated into further actions. So the apology is just a first step. Reparations to right the wrongs can take many forms, including such a formal apology and the acknowledgement of wrongs committed. But financial restitution and other forms of reparations, they need to follow now as well.
All right. So first step. Quincy, when you saw your Prime Minister, there were so many rumours that the Dutch government were about to apologise for the transatlantic slave trade. So on Monday, the 19th of December, it wasn't really a big surprise, your reaction when you saw and heard the apology.
Well, I mean, when you look at a speech more carefully, you realise that actually what he did is he sidestepped the possible ways of getting any financial restitution, any reparations, because he said that based on the laws of today, what happened in the past was not okay. He didn't say that what happened in the past was not okay based on what happened in the past. So what you get is an apology, which is actually a means to curtail any type of reparations. And one of the things which is really fascinating when you listen to Mark Rutte present this, this is someone who in 2003, as state secretary, implemented a policy which was basically racist. A Dutch court in 2007 labeled it racist. He became prime minister in 2010 with the help of the most racist party we have in parliament. He stepped down with his last cabinet because of institutional racism. And none of that is mentioned in the speech. None of that is mentioned that he himself personally is part of the legacy of continuing these policies, which are anti-black and harmful to descendants of enslaved people. And so the speech and the whole charade around it actually expose it to be what it is, and that's a farce.
Quincy is calling this apology a farce and a charade. Linda, you were involved in the negotiations. It took a long time to even get to that point where the Dutch government was saying, we apologise for the people we enslaved. So yes. Do you see it in that way, or are you seeing it as something that's much more positive?
Well, I see it as, well positive. It is something that had to be done. I mean, for us, the apologies are about, for me, the apologies are about recognition of the ancestors and the suffering they had, and the Dutch government taking responsibility for their actions. And I think, I also think that we shouldn't, for us as a country to move forward, to talk about maybe reparations, to talk about fixing what went wrong, not only in Holland, but also in the Dutch part of the Caribbean part of Holland and in Suriname. These apologies are very important. And I think it's the duty of the civil society to make sure that these apologies get their value. So you can see that the recognition is very important, and that is the way that I like to look at it, because we have the commemoration of the ending of slavery for the 20th years. And the main thing that I didn't like is that every time we had somebody from the government, Dutch government, being there, but never acknowledging the ancestors. And I think it should be about that also.
Quincy, your face is making all sorts of contortions.
I saw it.
Wrong, Quincy?
I mean, Mark Rutte is the one who 10 years ago came to the commemoration of the abolition of slavery and told Nimse, I'm not here with presents for you. I'm not going to save the institution. Because as in his first cabinet, one of the first things he did is he cut all funding for programs that had to deal with people of color, had to deal with migrant communities, migrant civil society. So having him be the one on the 19th of December, also the date 300 years ago, where one of these companies was started that was part and parcel of colonialism and enslavement and slave trade, is not just an offense, not just an insult, but it's adding salt to the wounds. Because what he's is he's claiming a part of this struggle while not acknowledging that people have been fighting for this for decades. For decades, not even mentioning them. He used a sentence where he said that this is a comma, not a point, which is something that a black artist said, Serrana Angelista. And even within his speech, he couldn't get so far to even reference her and mention her. I mean, this is such ridiculousness. And I'm looking at it, and the only thing that I can understand why a lot of organizations are for it and are, you know, standing by it, is because him and his cabinet have dangled $200 million in front of them and promised them some money. That's what it basically boils down to.
I don't think that. You know, the situation is what it is. If you look at the first time that somebody of African descent said that we want apology for what was done to our ancestors, was 1995. All the cabinets that we had earlier, they didn't have the guts to do it. And what you were saying about Nimse, it's true. In 2011, the funding stopped, but that didn't stop us. And and being here, still active, while it was not the case that we would be here still, that proves that you don't have to take matters as they are. We have our own agenda, and that means fighting institutionalized racism, and we need some kind of marking point where we can do it. And that's the situation we have.
Okay,
I don't have the privilege to be just skeptical. We have to look at the bigger picture.
All right, so the money that Queen C referenced was the money that's been attached to the formal apology so far is money for a slavery museum and also money for raising awareness about the Dutch transatlantic slave trade. I am going to go to reaction from a former colony of the Netherlands, and that is the Prime Minister of St. Martin. And her remarks are incredibly pointed, and she is not happy. Almaz, have a listen to this. Why would this happen? Here she is.
I address you today with mixed emotions and extend an invitation to openly dialogue on the ways to approach this abrupt and forced apology for slavery passed by the Netherlands, along with my colleagues throughout the Dutch Caribbean. I find myself forced to confront our traumatic histories according to the schedule and timeline set by the government of the Netherlands.
This apology did not go down well, Almaz. Forced on your schedule. This is not a good start.
No. The framework of this apology is the reason why there are mixed reactions. It's because there was a lack of consultations, and not just consultations as such, but meaningful and effective consultation with the people, the descendants of those enslaved. That is really crucial in processes of reparations, true processes of reparations. Because as I mentioned before, an apology is one thing, but financial restitution should be the next step as well. And if you look also at other examples, it's not the first time that consultations effectively done have been missing in processes of reckoning with colonial or slavery past. Another example would be Germany. They, in 2021, they finally recognized that the crimes committed during its colony of what is now Namibia amounted to genocide. However, what Germany failed to do is really deliver a true apology that acknowledges the wrongs committed by it and the true intention to repair these wrongs by listening to the descendants of those directly affected by its colonies. So the statement by the German government, it was also hastily done, and the people, the Nama and the Ovaherero, who were impacted by these colonial crimes, they were not formally consulted in advance. And the Namibia government, which was present at that statement delivery, was even surprised by that statement, even though they were made formal counterparts of the negotiation process for reparations. So it shows that it is absolutely crucial that communities, impacted people by the crimes, are part of these processes, or otherwise the legitimacy of it is not there. And what you end up with is a rejection and outcry and not a true reckoning per se of slavery or colonial past.
All right, I have so many thoughts from our YouTube audience. I'm going to get you to address them very briefly so that we can get in as many as possible. Linda, let me put this one to you. This is from Julie Good. Julie says, no apology is needed. That was another time. We were not there. Slavery has been around since the beginning of civilization. No money needs to be paid. Linda, instant reaction, please.
No, that's not true. If you look at how the enslavement of people of African descent started, it started with the permission of the Catholic Church in 1452, and specifically about enslaving people of African descent. I think that people should know, and there is a lack of history, knowledge about the history, there's a lack of awareness. And I think that's very important to understand that all the views we have, people have on people of African descent stem from that time. And that was also that is also recognized internationally by the UN and by the European Commission. So
and let me bring in another thought. Let me bring in another thought. This is from Raoul, who we spoke to a little bit earlier. He's an artist and a curator. Have a listen to him, Quincy, and then immediately respond off the back of his thoughts. Here we go.
The process leading up to the apologies, that's what we should be aware of. I think Dutch government has struck power play here, not respecting the different perspectives within the Afro-Dutch community and even not of their counterparts in the overseas territories. The different governments and also Prime Minister of St. Maarten, for example, has said already before the apologies that she wouldn't accept it. She changed a little bit in her point of view, but it shows you something about a colonizer's mindset that we're still dealing with within Dutch context.
Quincy, go ahead.
Well, I think I'd want to respond actually to Linda and the way in which she presented this idea that she doesn't have the space to be skeptical, and I think it's necessary to be skeptical.
The privilege. I said,
if you want to,
because it is about the legacy of this history. It is about the way people in the Caribbean part of Holland, in Suriname, people of African descent in Holland, how they can live their lives. So if I could have the privilege to just look from one perspective, I would say, well, we're not satisfied. What you see, that is after that the Prime Minister had spoken, most of the people who were skeptical were just like, okay, he used the right words. What is the next step to do? And for us, the reparation agenda is the most important thing. In 2011, everything that was about people of African descent was diminished. And you see the impact, we see that the corona
man,
on our...
By this same man who also is in charge of a government...
So, Quincy, can you not move beyond one particular man? We're talking about a legacy of colonialism and slavery.
Exactly.
Why are you fixated on one person? Why are you fixated on the messenger rather than the message? Just very briefly.
Because the messenger is the message. Okay. I think what we're seeing here is a way in which conversations have been used to legitimize this farce. In their defense in court, the government stated that they spoke with enough people to be able to present this. Mm-hmm. The people that they spoke with at the time had no clue that then later on, 4 months later, however months later, they would be used in this government push to force this apology onto communities. What we're seeing is wide-scale manipulation, and we're seeing a lot of people actually going ahead with it because of different ways of thinking, oh, it's going to be okay.
All right, Quincy, I'm going to share... Let me share something that you sent to us, because I think it proves your point in just a single image. So I'm going to share it on my laptop. You can describe what we're seeing, and then we're going to move on with some other contributors to the show who would like to add their points of view as well. Can you tell us, what are we looking at here?
So what we're seeing here is the family crest of the family Pels Rijke. And Pels Rijke, one of their descendants, became the founder of the law firm Pels Rijke, who is now also the government lawyer. In their family crest are two African heads. Two African heads in the family crest in Europe usually means that they were slave traders. If you go on the website of Pels Rijke, this is mentioned nowhere. And so they're the ones who were in court defending the forcing of this apology. They're the ones who say there is no juridical actual foundation basis for apology in the first place, while we're talking about a crime against humanity. I mean, this pretty much tells you the enmeshedness of everything, the entanglements of what we're seeing when we talk about apologies and reparations. It's not just a question of the government, it's with all of these different organizations.
So I'm going to push on because I want to bring in Linda. I'll come right back to you. Just excuse me one moment, because I think it's really important to hear from voices from outside of the Netherlands as well. So Shuja and Rhoda put this video together for us, and they're in St. Maarten. This is what they had to say about a formal apology. Now what?
As far as One St. Martin is concerned, the so-called apology by the Dutch state for slavery past in our island is unacceptable because it does not make a commitment for reparations.
As we move forward, and what we should be doing next is we should have a serious conversation about the colonial situation that exists in our country, the behavior of the Dutch, and reparation should be the main point of discussion. If this is not the reality, then we cannot move forward.
Sure.
Definitely. So, I think one of the interesting things one of the interesting things about this as well is that the islands and all these different territories were places of resource extraction for the development of Europe, the development of the Netherlands. What we're seeing is unequal access to comfort. We are comfortable here in the Netherlands versus the rest of the world pays for our comfort. On St. Martin, Aruba, Curaçao, they had to cut their budget on healthcare during a pandemic. The Dutch government forced them to cut their healthcare budget. If that isn't anti-Black, if that isn't institutional racism, I don't know what is. And that's not mentioned in the apologies. That's not mentioned in the text. It's not mentioned how to move forward by actually addressing these structural elements.
Let me go back to Almaz. Almaz, at the very beginning of our conversation, you mentioned what happens next after a formal apology. On Twitter, our audience have some suggestions. There needs to be reparations. Slave labourers must be compensated through their descendants. The benefits are visible everywhere. The form and manner must be agreed by all stakeholders, not the coloniser, again, determining critical next steps. This is the tricky bit. An apology needs to be followed by actions. Very simplistic. OK, now what? What makes a good apology, Almaz? Briefly, what are the ingredients?
Well, a good apology means actions follow because, I mean, an apology is words. So, you know, they need to now put the money where their mouth is, basically, you know, yes, to say it very informally. So reparations can take many forms. So restitution is one of them, which is financial compensation, because not only, you know, where there were lives lost, obviously during the time of slavery, but also the financial losses and the inequities that ensued from slavery that are still felt today by the people, whether that is loss of land or other economic losses. So the Netherlands has a duty to now also provide financial compensation. And also, sorry to draw again on that example of Germany. I am from Germany, so I have followed the reparations negotiations between Germany and Namibia very closely. And it's a process that should not be replicated by the Netherlands or by any other former colonial power because, yes, as I already mentioned, the consultations were missing of the impacted people, but also the development aid that was offered by Germany to be paid over 30 years is not what is understood by under the term reparations. It is not some kind of charity giving to the people, but it should be a true commitment to repair the wrongs.
All right,
and
reparations. I'm going to thank you. I want to squeeze in one more voice because this voice comes from the Netherlands Parliament. It's an MP who is very optimistic about this point that we are at right now in the Netherlands with Netherlands slave trade history. This is Don Cedar.
The apologies were a very good step, but it also feels like this is the beginning of a way forward of reconciliation. Reconciliation between different communities in the Netherlands, but also the former colonies. And I also think this could be a way where we can communicate with diasporas of many other people, many other descendants of slaves of different countries like the UK or France or different nations.
This conversation is going online on YouTube. There are lots of thoughts here. Bobby says about the Netherlands, the annual blackface celebration they like to have fun with, the best apology is reparations. The Dutch have a very dark history with racism. And then Benjamin was saying, US black folk in the US have been fighting for reparations and now the groundswell is happening worldwide. Thank you for your thoughts on YouTube, on Twitter. Almaz, Quincy and Linda, we really appreciate you helping us understand what makes a good apology. How do you make a formal apology? for enslaving millions of people. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time. Take care.